Cornucopia Radio presents
A Cornucopia Type of Person, a regular show in which we talk to people who make Cornucopia Radio happen and ask them where they are with their lives. This week, we talk to Roderick Shearer about becoming a new father.
But yeah, so we're here upstairs in the Queen's Head pub. Many a fun time in the past I've been up here doing some role-playing in my days when I was single, unhitched, and generally having no baggage whatsoever in the way of life itself. But now I'm a dad, you know, and now I'm basically up to my eyeballs in fatherhood and dirty nappies and quite a few sleepless nights. Yeah, I thought I'd sit down and, well, just sort of talk about life, basically, and, well, fatherhood in particular. Point out that I've been with my girlfriend for nearly 2 years now, and she's already got a little girl, and I knew this little girl from about sort of two and a half. So, you know, dirty nappies and things like that were no great shock to me by this point in time, obviously. But for me, I think the biggest sort of surprise, the thing that you can't really prepare for, is the actual moment when it all happens. And the first thing I can remember on the day my little boy was born was being woken up by my girlfriend downstairs in the lounge screaming that my waters have broken, and I'm so bleary-eyed, and, you know, I'm already suffering from sleep deprivation as it is, you know, trying to sort of do this and hold down a full-time job at the same time, and one thing and another. And it was, you know, it's quite exhausting in the lead-up. But this happened on the morning of the 4th of July. How ironic. 4 days before my birthday as well. And so everything sort of went from being sort of very relaxed and easygoing and slow motion even to suddenly going at lightning pace. Before we knew it, we were heading down to the garden gate and getting in her friend's car. And then we were going as fast as we dared to the hospital and got there for 10 to 6 in the morning. Or was it 20 to 6? It was such a blur, but basically by about an hour later, he was born. Mm-hmm. And, you know, no amount of preparation, talking can prepare you for the fact that it's both wonderful and traumatic all at the same time. It's almost sort of like a car crash in certain respects, because there's so much going on. And it was actually quite scary, because at one point, well, he was coming out with his neck, cord round his neck, and he wasn't actually breathing for a few seconds until they resuscitated him. And although I wasn't obviously particularly paying too much attention to what was going on at the other end of the bed, I was mainly there to reassure my girlfriend that everything's fine, everything's okay. Even though, you know, I think she could kind of half tell, even in the commotion and the flurry of excitement and activity, that something wasn't quite right, because she couldn't hear anything. Couldn't hear the thing she was listening out for, obviously. And he did, obviously, kick into life. And when he did, I think we were all mightily relieved. But, yeah, I mean, she was there for nearly a week, and at one point my son went into special care because he, for some inexplicable reason, and one that still hasn't been answered really, is he had this nice little trick of turning blue, which, you know, is quite worrying. But it later turns out that at least two of my three nephews both did the same thing when they were newly born. So although we were probably worrying over nothing at the time, we didn't understand or quite grasp the reason why this was happening. So obviously they took him into special care to monitor him. And for me, that was probably the thing that sort of, as it were, emotionally sent me over the edge. Because obviously I'd been having to just sort of cope and try to hold it all together. And it's not an easy thing to have to go away from the hospital, leave your girlfriend there to, because she has to be there. And there's me and her little girl having to walk away from the hospital, and me, you know, trying to sort of not fall to pieces and getting as far as the side of the Hallamshire Hospital and just turning into a blubbering wreck, basically. Although it later turned out there was nothing wrong with him at all, but they had to perform a lot of stuff on him, and, you know, I'm kind of glad I wasn't there to see it all, for the simple reason I don't think I would have coped very well, to be honest. And, you know, it's taken a very long time to adjust, because, you know, I've sort of suddenly discovered that actually there's a lot of things I can't do anymore. Mm-hmm. And I can't just sort of, you know, if I want to go out or see people or whatever, I can just go and do it, you know. I mean, not that I was completely carefree beforehand, but, you know, in a lot of respects, I'm, you know, I have to, you know, prioritise what I'm doing. And, you know, I mean, even coming in to do some bits for your radio, mm-hmm. you know, I've had to sort of schedule that in amongst everything else. And, you know, so I'm sort of having to, as it were, sort of grow up in ways that I haven't had to do up until now, you know. Although, you know, I've hardly been particularly immature, even, you know, when I was single, but it's sort of, you know, another stage in my life, you know. Because, you know, I mean, the amazing thing is that in terms of development, I mean, my little son, he's, you know, he's growing all the time. He's getting bigger and heavier, and, you know, his face is even changing quite rapidly, which is no surprise to me in some respects, because I've seen that process already, you know. Most recently with my two nieces, and, you know, how the facial features can change so much in the space of a few months, you know. So, you know, it's never a dull moment. And tonight I'll be on the night feed, mm-hmm. and then tomorrow morning I'll be having to pull my uniform on and go off to work. but I think to sort of say, well, if you can't economically afford it, you shouldn't have children, I think is wrong. Obviously, you need to be sure that you're not going to completely struggle to bring a child up. But I think the most important thing that a child needs, apart from a lot of stability and a routine and attention, is love. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not about, can I economically provide for his every whim and need and desire? It's a case of, you know, do I actually want a child because, you know, I want to spend time with them and love them and all the rest of it? And I think that's basically what should be the key question. Because at the end of the day, yes, there is a lot of help from the state and whatnot, but there needs to be, because the simple fact of the matter is life is getting more and more expensive, you know. Even the basic things now are getting, you know, quite stupidly expensive. And you really have to shop around and, you know, and look at what you're buying. Is that really worth what I'm paying for it, you know? Because at the end of the day, I mean, you know, with things like basic sort of economics, it's a case of an item's only worth what you're prepared to pay for it. So, you know, it's a case of using your noggin and not spending silly money or just going somewhere because it seems to be always the best place or whatever. But it's not just that, though. It's also sort of emotional needs and, you know, sort of engaging. Now, when you've got a baby in your arms, it's quite easy to engage, you know, because all you've got to do is sort of, you know, make funny noises at them and talk to them. And I do talk to my baby some properly. I don't go goo goo gaga at him. Although sometimes I sort of mimic what he does sort of, you know, and sort of come out with sort of funny little things, you know, or saying, oh, he looks like he's doing this or saying that, or, you know, and even sort of things like references to things like Family Guy spring to mind, you know, because in a weird sort of way, the character Stewie Griffin, although obviously he's completely and utterly fictional and all the rest of it, is a character that in some respects, when he's acting totally as a toddler and not as some sort of, you know, miniature-sized adult and all the rest of it, is so very true as well. It's sort of, you know, it's a very sort of strange thing, but you sort of watch something like that and you can almost relate to it because it's like, well, yeah, you know. You know. So yeah, and you know, and actually things like that spring into mind help sometimes when things start getting a bit, you know, a bit much and a bit stressful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is when it comes to things like toys. I mean, I don't know why, but it seems to be a thing where we feel compelled to when we get a little toy monkey or other such furry creature. We insist on giving it a name and. I think my girlfriend came up with a cracker because there's one that sort of looks something like a giraffe. It's not exactly a giraffe, but it looks has a head of a giraffe. And she just suddenly came out with, oh, I know what we'll call him. We'll call it Colonel Giraffe, you know.
I like that a lot.
When we were on holiday last year, I bought my girlfriend a sheet that folds out like a pillow. I could have gotten her a cow, but I thought, you know, she might sort of take offence at that one, so I'll get her the sheep instead, you know. And she'd bought me something as well from this shop in Blackpool, and it was a little monkey. And we were sort of sat in the caravan one evening, and she said, so what are you going to call your monkey then? And, you know, this might be a bit rude, I'm not sure, but I said... Oh, I'll call him Spanky. So now we've got a monkey in the house called Mr. Spanky.
Yeah.
And it's quite funny because her daughter sort of decided to sort of pretty much nick the monkey, pretty much. And she sort of turned around to mummy and said, so what's the name of this monkey then? And she came, oh, it's called Mr. Spanky. And it's stuck ever since, and yeah. So, you know, people have sort of come up to her and said, oh, that's a nice little monkey, what's he called, Mr. Spanky? Everyone's full about laughing, yeah, yeah. But she's probably one of these people who, when she's older, is probably not going to be fazed or embarrassed by much, but you never know. You know? might have to trot that one out at the 18th birthday party. So the next time we got a monkey and it was all sort of orangey-coloured, we just opted with a very prosaic name of Ginger. I think, as everyone would readily agree, I mean, fatherhood is something you can't really prepare for until you're actually sort of faced with it. You're in that situation and you've got to sort of deal with it and get on with it, basically. And, you know, it's something which I think ideally is best approached with, you know, an open mind and at least with some forethought as to, you know, actually wanting to, you know, be a father in the first place, because, you know, some people want to, and some, you know, and that's fair enough, you know, not all of us want to do the same as everyone else. But, you know, the important thing is, you know, to sort of, you know, be mindful of the fact that, you know, if you want kids, it's because you want them and because, you know, you want that they're wanted and you love them, and yeah. The only other thing is you've just got to put up with a lot of sleep deprivation in the meantime, and yeah, you're probably going to find your wallet pretty much empty pretty much 99% of the time, and that's pretty much going to be the case until they're about 30, probably. So, you know, it's a lifetime commitment. Once you join the sort of fatherhood club, you're pretty much committed then, you know, and that's that, really. So, you know, it's you know, it's quite momentous and it's very life-changing, and, you know, go with the flow, really, and, you know, and take every day as it comes.